This is All Things ANSYS, a podcast from the technical support staff at PADT. Episode 9, an overview of modeling 3D printing with ANSYS, and a discussion on how to get your models to run faster. Hi there, and welcome to episode 9. We're a little late. We had vacations. Well, I had vacation. I think Ted as well.
Yep.
A bunch of us were out, and then we had the Thanksgiving holiday, so we actually missed a recording. Hopefully people noticed. That makes me feel good if people missed it. So we missed 2 weeks, which is okay. We'll do that occasionally, but we'll try and keep up this pace as much as we can. So I hope everybody had a good break. All of you in the U.S. had a good Thanksgiving break and didn't eat too much turkey like I did. And enjoyed everything in time with family or friends, and maybe some travel. So as far as the podcast goes, we're up to 1,476 downloads as of this morning. Love to see that cross the 1,500. We're growing. About every time we come out, we add about 150 to 180 downloads. So we'd love to see more, and that's where you guys come in. If you can get out there and let people in the ANSYS community know this podcast is good and that you enjoy it, and hopefully get more people signed up to listen to it. So let's go ahead and get started today. We'll go ahead and go around the panel as usual, starting on my left.
All right, this is Joe Woodward, Senior Mechanical Engineer here at PADT. I work in the Simulation Support Group.
And this is Ted Harris. I manage our Simulation Support Group here at PADT. Been an ANSYS user for a lot of years.
And my name is Eric Miller, and I'm one of the owners here at PADT, and I head up a bunch of things, including the engineering services team here at PADT. And we're going to start off today talking about something that's near and dear to PADT's heart. So there's three things we do at PADT: simulation, product development, and 3D printing. And very recently, two of our favorite things in the world have been very active in the support of our third favorite thing. That is that ANSYS has been doing a lot in the area of 3D printing simulation. We'll talk about in what areas very shortly. And that's great. That's simulation and 3D printing coming together to benefit those of us doing product development. So it's a great time for us. We were lucky enough to have a customer visit that brought out a bunch of ANSYS developers and other folks. So we were able to talk about this in depth a little bit. And then ANSYS is very secretive when they acquire somebody. I don't think the people on the 3D printing team knew this was going to happen, or if they did, they kept it close to their vest, because we actually discussed that ANSYS should really buy 3D Sim. Well, I don't think they were listening to us. I think they had already done it, and the ink was dried right after that visit. And so they announced the fact that they acquired a company based out of Park City, Utah, which is part of our territory, so we're really excited about that.
It's only like 2 days after those meetings.
Yeah, 2 days after the meetings they announced it. And we're like, what? You couldn't tell us? No, that would be insider information. So a lot going on in 3D printing, so we thought that would be our first topic for today, is talk about that. And the first thing to note is, where is ANSYS focused? And it's really on a very specific area, which is powder-based metal laser melting. And so that would be systems from like EOS, Concept Laser, which is now part of General Electric. I think there's Phoenix, 3D Systems bought Phoenix, which is another one. The names are not coming to me right now, but there's about 15 or 20 companies that make these systems that use a high-powered laser to draw with a laser on a layer of powder. That powder melts and then solidifies together. Put a new powder layer down, and it puts another one up. That's where ANSYS is focusing right now. That's where their customers are asking for it the most. And the real goal there is to predict residual stresses. There's a lot of other things we want to know, but right now what we really want to know is, what are the residual stresses and the deformation caused by the fact that you're solidifying metal at one point of a layer and going ahead and things are solidifying on the other side, and you're heating up another side. So you get these residual stresses based upon the geometry. Anything before we get into the details of the two different approaches you guys want to add to that?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, another aspect of this is topology optimization, which is also a big push at ANSYS that we've talked about early on in our podcast. But, you know, that's what really allows us to come up with the organic designs that can really leverage the additive manufacturing technology. So I just wanted to mention that topology optimization is a big part of ANSYS that feeds into the whole 3D printing world.
And I think one of the goals, you said the residual stresses, but also that the end deformed shape so that you can back calculate what the original design needs
really
to be
good point.
To get the shape that you want. So
yeah, that's a really good point. So that's not automated at this juncture. It will be hopefully in the future, but that's the way people are using it to a large extent is, hey, what's actually going to – in the turbine engine business, we talk about hot to cold conversion, right? When the engine's spinning, you want the airfoil to be in the shape that's the most efficient. And the same thing here is we want to build a part knowing it's going to distort. So we're kind of back calculating.
So. Yeah, so using ANSYS to design a part that's going to be deflected some way to its final shape is nothing new.
Right.
It's just a different technology that needs that capability.
How do we calculate what those thermal stresses are? That's what's different. The rest of it's the same. And in fact, in a discussion with that customer we were visiting, that kind of came up is, well, how do we do the back calculation? And we kind of looked at them and going, you guys have been doing this for 25 years, 30 years. You've been doing these back calculations. It's no different. It's just that you're calculating the initial deformation slightly different. So I think the next good step is to talk about how ANSYS is doing this initially using the APDL solver, and then at 18.2 or is it 19, it'll be in mechanical. Can't remember.
At 18.2, there is a extension available on the
that's right.
ACT extension store. It's sort of in a, let's call it a beta mode right now, beta feature or pre-production release.
Good. Okay, that's right. So basically what the approach, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, because I'm going from memory here. The way ANSYS is doing it is they talk to a bunch of their customers and say, well, what do you really want to know? And what we really want to know is what's the thermal distribution during the build and calculating from the cool down layer by layer what the residual stresses and then deformation are going to be. And the way the approach they've taken, and they've done testing to see if this is accurate enough, verified that it's accurate enough, is they don't look at the beam path. So if you're familiar with these machines, right, the laser, you guys can't see me going like this, I guess. The laser draws what it wants to melt on the top layer of the liquid. And that pattern really determines a lot of things. But from a generic sense, from an overall sense, overall bulk deflection, we're talking about microstructure here, we're talking about bulk deflection. That doesn't really matter. What really matters is what is the geometry of a given layer as it solidifies. And in fact, what they found with some testing is you can combine multiple layers. So you can tell it to do 10 layers at the same time. What is the shape of that? And it basically does the calculation of what the heat it looks like and what the thermal profile. You tell what the thermal profile looks like. So how is that going to cool down in this block of powder? And it's going to cool down in that block of powder, knowing how hot it got in order to melt it, what the material properties are, normal stuff you need for analysis. And they did this in APDL. So there's nothing, there's no new technology, no new elements, nothing like that. And then once they got it working in APDL, they created this extension in mechanical that allows you to set this up.
Right, but there are some new APDL commands that enable this.
Why don't you talk about that? So what did they expose, and what does it look like, if you can remember, to the user?
Well, the actual commands, I can't tell you off the top of my head. But there's just commands specific to doing the operations that you need to do to simulate this layer-by-layer build. So
I think it's a time per layer and the number of layers per step.
Right. Yeah, just various parameters related to how the process works.
The good news for me when I saw that was I got all kind of wrapped around my axle thinking I needed to know all these detailed build parameters from my machine. And if you've ever done metal 3D printing, every build is different. I thought, this is never going to work. It's not practical. Well, that's what the customers told ANSYS and why ANSYS is now dealing with it this way. So they're very basic parameters that you need. Nothing that's going to be hard for you to get. So that should be fairly easy to set this up. You need the geometry of what you're melting, the melt beam that you want, and the build volume as well as the build plate needs to be defined.
Number of lasers, things like that.
Number of lasers. Oh, important thing that's specified that I thought was really useful because it drives the thermals quite a bit is your support geometry. And the problem with support geometry in metal is it's very thin. So if you tried to model that with a bunch of shells, you'd go nuts. So they provide a really nice tool that allows you to approximate the thermal and stress characteristics of the contacts and the smear properties. Or they're not contacts, I said contacts. Of the supports, and then they smear the properties over the layers. So you define your support geometry, but then you define what its density looks like so that you don't have to model it in that absolute detail. Yeah. So very, very useful.
You definitely need to model it.
Yes.
That's one of the differences between printing in metal and printing,
yes,
you know, with our FDMs.
With plastic, yeah.
The supports are not there to support the part. They are there just for the thermal load to be transferred down to the build plate.
It's really a heat sink in a lot of ways.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's a heat sink.
Yeah. So these are the things, and there's some really good presentations out there for it. We'll probably do a seminar on it coming up. But we just wanted everybody to kind of be aware that it's there. Don't be afraid of it. If you're doing metal 3D printing, you can start modeling now with ANSYS. You don't have to be looking at some third-party tool. But if you were going to look at a third-party tool, we would have recommended 3DSim. Which is now part of the ANSYS family. So the significant difference is the approach. If you want to model fairly accurately the build process using finite element method, it can take days, if not hours, or days, if not weeks, to model that using FEA. So they use a different approach, and the details will come out as we learn more about the tool and dig down into it. But it's an explicit method. And it runs much, much faster and has other advantages compared to the ANSYS methodology. It gives you a bit more local results rather than the global bulk results. And that's kind of the biggest advantage of it. And it's fast. It's really fast. So a lot of companies are opting to go that methodology in order to get quicker responses than running, say, the FEA methodology that ANSYS is using. So in a typical... What we're seeing as a pattern with ANSYS is they have to make a build or buy decision. They decided to build using their existing technology because there are advantages there and customers need that. And instead of reinventing the wheel, they decided to go out with what was the best solution using this explicit approach, and they ended up purchasing 3DSim. So that was a really good call on their part.
And my understanding is the two technologies are complementary.
Very complementary, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll understand more of that, and we'll definitely try to get the... So it turns out, you know, we've been in the 3D printing business for a while, so my partner Ray Chu, who's been a leader in 3D printing for over 30 years now, not 30 years, over 25 years now, he knows the guy that wrote the code. They used to work together at various... where the guy used to work before. So Ray knows him, and the first thing we did when we found out is Ray reached out, and they're going to come and visit us coming up here pretty quick here. You guys may not know that. I don't know. We haven't set up the time yet. But they're going to be in town, and so they decided they'd come and visit us while they were here. So we're really excited about that. So that's when we get to ask all of our technical questions, and we'll try to get them on a podcast in the future as well, so they can talk about it technically as well. But if you are evaluating modeling, I guess the takeaway from this whole section is ANSYS does have capabilities using the existing tools. Yeah, you got something to add, Ted?
Yeah. One thing we haven't talked about, and I guess I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, Eric, is the material properties and the challenge with obtaining material properties. So maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's challenging. So we're dealing with fairly well-known powder metals here. And the nice thing about the ANSYS approach is that they've used some papers, some university studies, some that ANSYS has funded, some that weren't funded by ANSYS, to come up with some bulk properties that we can get out of these powders. So you don't have to know huge details. You need to know that it's an aluminum powder and that the average size, particle size, is such and such. I don't even think you need to know the distribution. I think it's pretty straightforward. And that allows you to get close enough answers. And I think that's the key thing to remember is that, you know, in the long run, we're going to be able to figure out what the microstructure is, because that really matters.
And it seems like we're just on the cusp,
of
getting
that
information.
Yeah. So we're one of the things that 3D Sim, City Sim has two products. The one I talked about, and we talked about, is there that models the whole building, gets you residual stresses. The other one is looking at microstructure, and I don't know much about that product. And so we're going to try and learn more about that and how far along that is, because that's the other thing. We want to, the answer strategy is, we want you to be able to design for 3D printing, and that's where topological optimization, the ability to model some of these repeated, what are they called, the cellular patterns, you know, so you don't have to have all
the
solids.
Lattice work.
The lattice work, thank you. To be able to model the lattice work in space claim as well as in ANSYS mechanical. That's all there from a design standpoint. We want to be able to model the process and be able to predict how your part's going to perform from a deflection standpoint. And then the third piece is understanding this microstructure, which is going to be really, really important. And we're going to dig into all those in coming podcasts as time goes by, as we learn more ourselves and use it ourselves. So we've got some projects that we're going to apply this to in-house as well. But don't I'll be honest. Our competitors are using this capability as a wedge to get meetings with ANSYS customers. I mean, well, we've got a better solution for modeling 3D printing. Truth is, no, they don't. And they're just using it to get in the door. We now, with the addition of 3D Sim, we have a complete solution now that's compatible and competitive with everything else out there. So do dig into it. If you're a customer of ours, reach out to us. If you have some consulting work you'd like us to do with you on this, reach out to us. We'd love to explore it with you. And if you, or you can contact whoever you buy your ANSYS from. We're all getting educated on this as time goes by. It's all very new and very exciting. And we hope to have some blog posts on how we've used it internally as well as talk about it on the podcast. Anything else you guys want to add to that topic?
No.
It was very high level, but sometimes we just got to introduce it high level and then come back when we know more. So let's go ahead and take a commercial break right now, and maybe I'll stick a Stratasys ad in here for 3D printing, so you're talking about it, and then we'll be right back.
Ugh, hey Linda, I've been trying to run these simulations all day, but the stupid computer isn't fast enough.
I know, Dave, I wish IT would give us better computers.
Oh, you know, that reminds me, a friend of mine was saying he got a simulation computer from someplace called the PADT.
Hmm, what's so special about it?
Well, I guess they have this program called the Cube Computing Solutions, where they custom build simulation computers just to fit your needs with whatever you want, whatever graphics cards you need, the amount of cores you need, whatever works best for you.
Huh. How do I get one of these?
Well, if I remember him correctly, he said you go to www.padtinc.com/cube. I think that's right.
Huh. Maybe we should tell the IT guy about this.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Welcome back. So for our next topic, we're going to discuss high-performance computing, or HPC. And we had planned to have a couple of other folks here, especially from our IT department, but unfortunately they got called away unexpectedly. But instead of skipping the topic, we're just going to have a very open discussion about it. We didn't prepare anything, and I'll just ask some questions and kind of pick the guys' brains, as well as my own brain here, for some suggestions. But the real thing I wanted to talk about today concerning HPC is the real world situation we run into, which is customers, their models are just taking too long to run. And so if you're one of those customers, I'm going to start with you, Ted. You get a support call. This is totally off top of the head here, so there may be a lot of humming and hawing and gut roof. What we can, it's okay to circle back and change your answer. So I call up, I'm one of your customers, like, my model's taking like a week to run. What can I do?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a great question. And, you know, the first thing I would suggest is look at the mesh and make sure it's an efficient mesh. Make sure it has the level of requirement or the level of refinement needed where we're expecting high stress gradients or, you know, whatever the quantity of interest is. But maybe, you know, bigger elements away from that.
Or make sure that they're not modeling way more than they need.
Oh, so the extent of the model. Can they cut the model, the actual geometry they're modeling?
For what they're trying to analyze, maybe they don't need all that.
Maybe they've got too much detail.
Too much detail.
So,
really good point.
Maybe defeaturing either on the geometry side or mesh-based defeaturing in ANSYS Mechanical would be appropriate. But let's assume that, yes, their mesh is good. And, you know, other things that can cause the model to run a long time are lots of nonlinearities. And maybe it's... maybe not all of those nonlinearities are appropriate or needed, or maybe the time step or sub-step settings are not right. So, you know, those are the first things we would tend to look at. But let's assume all that stuff checks out and it's just a challenging model to solve. And so the next thing we would want to do is leverage high-performance computing. And so there are a couple of options for doing that. And really more than that, but you know, we can decide between solving shared memory or solving distributed. So shared memory means that we're solving on a single computer with multiple cores, but all sharing the same RAM. Whereas distributed means that we're allowing each core to have its own dedicated memory, and each core is solving a chunk of the model that way.
Really, we're breaking the matrix up, right, and distributed, and each core gets a chunk of the matrix.
Right, yeah. Yep. And so for most problems, distributed is going to be faster than shared memory. However, we have found that for certain contact problems, nonlinear contact, for the sake of accuracy and convergence, you may want to go shared memory, or at least compare back-to-back.
It's always good to try these things out on a smaller problem, see which one's best.
Yeah, and even on the real-world problem, at least if it's your first time running a problem like that. Another thing we might want to look at is what kind of licensing the customer has to enable high-performance computing with ANSYS. By default, with most of the solvers, you can solve on a couple of cores. But not more than that without additional licensing. And so, you know, some customers might say, well, why do I need to pay more money to solve on more cores? Well, you know, ANSYS has invested heavily into new solver technology to take advantage of the opportunities available for multiple cores. And so there's a, you know, a benefit to paying that additional money to take advantage of those newer technologies.
And you get your models run that much faster.
Yeah, there's a lot of value there. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. And another, besides solving on multiple cores, another benefit can be had in solving on a GPU. And so what ANSYS has done is enabled some of the solvers to take advantage of basically the gaming technology that goes into graphics cards and being able to utilize those multiple processors in a fast way to help speed up the solution as well. Now, only certain graphics cards are supported, and they're, you know, typically high-end levels, but it's the same ANSYS licensing for HPC that enables the GPU solution as well. So you can solve on a single core with the GPU, you could solve on multiple cores with the GPU, but for most problems, the GPU is going to show a boost in performance as well.
So sometimes a model's taking too long because it's thrashing around paging and memory. How does a customer identify that?
Well, these days RAM is cheap compared to what it used to be. The first thing to look at is in, and I should preface this by saying we're really focusing on structural simulations here. None of us in the room right now are CFD people, so we're concentrating on what goes on with the structural solve. So assuming you're running ANSYS Mechanical or ANSYS Mechanical APDL, when you submit the solution in this solver output, it's going to tell you if the solve is in core or out of core. If it's solving in core, that's good because it's not going to have to do swapping back and forth due to a memory limitation. So if you're solving your models and you're seeing that it's solving out of core, you could probably see a big benefit by getting additional RAM.
So I'm sorry, the first investment to make is just max out the RAM on your machine. Right. If this happens a lot.
Yeah.
and then look at adding maybe a poor man's way is instead of buying a new box. Some large companies can't do this, but if you have the flexibility to upgrade your box, maybe putting more cores, swapping out your motherboard may support a higher core count or a higher clock speed CPU. So that's an easy way.
Yeah, I mean we're going down the hardware path,
yeah.
And I'm not really a hardware expert, but as you might imagine, faster processors are going to speed up your solution, and faster hard drives are going to speed up your solution. So using an SSD for the solve is going to be a performance improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah,
make sure you're always running locally.
That's
we
a good
still
one.
Have people that
we see that across the board, CFD, structural, where IT has said, well, we don't want to put a lot of disk space on people's desktops. So we're going to give you this super expensive, super fast hard drive array that's going to sit over here in a clean room somewhere. Don't believe it. It's not the same speed. Get enough at least to solve local, disk space to solve local. So SSDs are great. The other thing that we do a lot of, I'm channeling David here, our IT manager. A lot of thing we do a lot of is we put them in RAID arrays. Not for redundancy, but for speed. And is it RAID 5 that we use? I think it's RAID 5. It's been a while. I wrote a bunch of blog articles on this years and years ago.
Yeah.
But the quickest way to speed up your I/O is to put like 4 or 5 drives in there, all in parallel, so that the program writes in parallel to those. And that really speeds up your I/O. So if you're I/O bound, look at your disk drives. If you're memory bound, add your memory. And then start looking at CPUs.
And while we're talking about cores as well, it used to be a few years ago, we would say that, beyond about 6 cores,
true,
you're just not going to see much of a speed up for a structural simulation. Well, that's no longer true. There are some benchmarks from ANSYS that show speed ups into the hundreds of cores. Now, that doesn't mean every single model is going to benefit from solving on hundreds of cores, but the limit of 6 is no longer appropriate. You can see a benefit, 16 cores, 32 cores, and maybe even beyond that. It is problem dependent. I mean, that's a question we get often is, how much speed up am I going to see? And while there's no real single answer that we can give for that, because it's very problem dependent. Depends on the size of the model, what type of solution it is, how many contact regions you have, whether it's nonlinear, et cetera.
Yeah, in fact, a really good point is that running parallel only helps with a big model. If you have a small model, relatively small model, but maybe a lot of iterations, say you're doing a nonlinear run, you have thousands of iterations and it takes forever, you want to have the fast machine. You want to have fast disk drive, fast RAM, fast motherboard, fast CPU. If you've got big problems that are running out of resources, that's when parallel starts paying. You had something to say, Jack?
I think they've mentioned before that lately they've said 16 processors, 16 cores is kind of a sweet spot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think at this release, 16 cores, you start getting diminishing returns over that for mechanical. Now, on the CFD side, I can say that it scales, Fluent especially, scales linearly to thousands of cores.
Yeah,
right.
I think they're
totally
benchmarking hundreds of thousands
of
cores now.
It's a whole different world.
Yeah. For the small customers out there that might have, a 16-core workstation or a 32-core workstation, I think they're kind of surprised to hear that there are companies out there that are solving on thousands of cores all the time. Well, when you think of a jet engine, there's a lot of technology in there, and those are the types of simulations that people have to do to be competitive.
Yeah.
One of the other benefits of having a lot of more cores on your box is also the parallel meshing that ANSYS has now.
Good point.
The by default, it's going to try to use all the cores on the box,
okay,
and it will mesh each part on a separate core.
Okay.
They are working on getting each. So if you have a multi-body part where there's several bodies in a single part, that will still mesh on one core.
Okay.
They're working on getting that split out as well. So that definitely speeds things up.
And another part of parallelization that I'm thinking about right now is within, the last couple of releases, I'm not sure if it was in 17, but definitely in 18, in addition to partitioning the model by elements for certain frequency solutions, you can now partition by frequency contribution. So that's another way of parallelizing the solution and taking advantage of HPC, is to solve that frequency solution with chunks of modes versus chunks of portions of the mesh.
In fact, when HFSS, high-frequency electromagnetics users, talk about HPC, they're usually talking about exactly that. They're doing a frequency sweep, and a third of those frequencies are on one machine, a third on another, and a third on a third. So they break up that harmonic analysis across multiple machines rather than solving the matrix on multiple machines. So there's parallel can mean many things. It can mean meshing. It can mean frequency parallel. It can mean breaking up the actual matrix. So there's a lot of different things there.
And ANSYS is working on all of those different things at one time.
They're spending a lot of time and money to make it faster. And it's another reason to stay up to date, those that aren't on maintenance. Generally speaking, we have a customer that's off maintenance, and they want to know, well, you haven't added any features I care about. Give us a model. Let me benchmark it for you. Usually we can show a significant speed up over multiple releases, just in improvements in how they use the math on the chip, as well as parallelization of more and more of the code. And just efficiency increases.
Yep. ANSYS Inc. definitely does a lot of work with the latest versions of the processors mm-hmm. that come out to make the code run in an optimal way, faster way on new versions of hardware.
Yeah, it's worth upgrading just for that. I mean, some hardware releases we've gotten, ANSYS slash hardware releases, with the same clock speed, same number of cores, we've seen 10 to 20% increases in certain aspects of the solve. So there's certain tasks that may have a multiply and divide, or multiply and add, and that's two clock steps. And on the new chip, it's one clock step. That's huge.
It's huge. Maybe we should talk about some things that mm-hmm. don't perform well.
Yes,
or that can, you know, hinder the performance. And Eric, you alluded to one, which is running too small of a model.
Mm-hmm.
If you have too small of a model and you're breaking it up into too many little chunks, you're going to probably pay an overhead premium, and it's going to bog down and take longer than if you'd have just solved it on a single machine. But another big one is interconnect speed.
Great point. Yeah, why don't you explain what interconnect
well,
is?
Well, I'm probably not the best person to talk about expertise standpoint, but faster is better.
That's better.
And if you have slow interconnects, you're not going to see anywhere near the kind of speed up, even if you have fast processors,
mm-hmm.
Because you're bottlenecked in transferring data.
And because I'm a mechanical engineer, I always think of these things as pipes with water flowing through them. And where's my choke point? So the interconnector, the cables that connect your two computers or three computers or four computers, right? So you have multiple cores per chip, you have multiple chips per box, and then you may have multiple boxes. If you can solve in one box, you don't have an interconnect problem. But usually you're going to have to go to multiple boxes, and you have to connect those two. And what we call poor man's interconnect is Ethernet. So you may have a 1 gig Ethernet, you hook that together. Well, you're slowing down the guy in the cubicle next to you watching YouTube when you do that, because you're sending matrix information back and forth through your switch. If you can only do a poor man's interconnect, make sure you have your own hub. So you're not going through the company hub, but you have your machines just connected to each other when you're solving. And then have another network card on one of the machines that talks to the rest of the world, but connect those machines on a dedicated high-speed switch. You can get up to 10 gig E now, which is pretty damn fast. The next step up is InfiniBand, which I think is 40 or 50. This is why David needs to be here. I think 40 or 50 gig E. And then there's other interconnects that get up to 100 gig E. And you need to talk to a professional when you get to that level. But if you're going to try and do a poor man's cluster, definitely spend money on your own switch and go with 1 gig E or 10 gig E for that. And again, make sure you have a big enough problem to do it. We have run across customers in the past who spent maybe $100,000 on a cluster. And why isn't my job running any faster? Well, the problem isn't that your job is too big. Your problem is you have too many iterations. And so you should be spending the money on the most expensive, the fastest chip you can get, the most memory you can get, the fastest disk drives, et cetera. So talk to your professional. We do this. Anything else you guys want to add before we wrap it up?
No.
No.
Okay. We'll come back to this topic when the IT guys are available to correct us everything we said wrong. But Ahmed
showing itself.
Yeah, Ahmed and David are both busy right now. We do this. We actually make custom machines, cube computers. You may have heard the ads or us mention it before on this podcast. But we also do, if you don't want to buy a computer from us, but you just want consulting, it is one of the services we offer. And we do recommend it. It's not very expensive. It's a couple hours of maybe Ted's time and David's time to understand what your problems are and really figure out so you spend your money wisely. If you've got a $100,000 budget for a mini cluster or a $250,000 budget for a mini cluster, we want to make sure you get as much horsepower to that as you need for your problems. And everybody's problems are different. So let us help you with that. If you can't do that, definitely do talk to somebody that understands HPC. A lot of people out there selling high-performance computing are used to selling web servers, and they will sell you a great web server with lots of redundant. One of the first things we always do is turn off the RAID stuff that backs up your data. Well, you want to do that eventually, but while you're solving, you don't want to slow down, so you don't want to do that. So, but a lot of computer salespeople want you to have these really fancy disk arrays that are great for databases, but they're not for high-performance computing and simulation. So get an expert that understands high-performance simulation, which is PADT, by the way. So let's move on to the next topic, which is ANSYS news. Now, the big news in the ANSYS world, number one, is they really, we talked about this in the last podcast. They released their financials. We said, what's that going to do to the stock price? Well, it bumped it up to 155 is where it peaked. That's a 68% growth over the last 52 weeks. It was the low during the last 52 weeks was $92 a share, and it's up to 155. I'm sure you all bought at 92 and it sold at 155. I think it's down to 140 something right now. So yeah, no, I didn't either. So, but anyway, it's good to see the company strong. They're making good investments, and we'll talk about some of those investments in the rest of the news, which is the first one we already discussed, which is the latest acquisition was 3D Sim. You'll see them buying key technology like this. They bought the Ensight post-processor. They bought 3D Sim. They bought some high-frequency electromagnetic tools, icing. So these niche tools where customers are like, ANSYS, will you do this? But there aren't enough customers to really justify reinventing the wheel, and they're just going and acquiring the technology from the best in breed and integrating it in. They're doing really well with that, and we expect to see more of that. And I wish I could predict who it's going to be next, but we're glad to see the 3D Sim and Ensight were the two latest ones to join the ANSYS family, and we look forward to working with them in the future. On the blog side of things, the latest version of ANSYS Advantaged is focused on electronic devices. Please do take a look at that. Actually, these are old notes. I thought I hit save. It's not in there. So let me see if I can go from memory. Definitely ANSYS Advantaged was on electronics. There's a couple good blog posts recently, and one of them was on discrete particle modeling. So ANSYS partnered with a couple different companies that do basically model rocks, which is basically what it is. So if you have a steam shovel and you're picking up rocks, what does that load look like? So you've got this, it's not a liquid and it's not a solid, and you don't want to treat it as either. You want to treat it as discrete solids. And that's what these tools do. And they've been one of them just integrated EDIM, I think it's called, just integrated with ANSYS recently. And there's a really good blog article about their integration and how it works. So if you work with soil or rocks or powders or any of that kind of stuff, do take a look at that. It's one of those things we've always wanted to be able to model and couldn't. Also, Alex posted a really good article that's getting a lot of reposts on using ANSYS and ANSYS Mechanical and ANSYS APDL to get reaction forces from a PSD simulation, a random vibration simulation. So that's something that wasn't always easy to get accurately, because if you've ever studied random vibration, the problem is you lose signs during the process because you're taking square roots of squares. And then how do you calculate a force when you've you chain tick in the direction out of it, right? So there's a way to get around that. There's a way to handle it, and he goes through all the math of it, and it's a really good article that gets really into the depth, and I really recommend you take a look at it. And then on the
high frequency, that's on the PADT.
That's
the
PADT blog. Yes, not focus the thank blog. You, Ted. Yes, on the PADT focus blog. So www.padtinc.com/blog and click on focus to just get the ANSYS related stuff. The other thing we posted was Michael Griesi posted a really nice article about a seminar that he attended about antenna modeling for 5G. So I guess we're moving on to a new generation of broadband with cell towers, and the antennas are different and unique, and people are using HFSS to model that. It's a really good, as well as IoT. So it's a really good article about how people are using simulation to make better antennas. And that's all I got for news. Any of you guys have any? Oh, we don't have any events this time around because, it's December and we don't have any events. What I'd like to let people know, though, is that our PADT is hiring. So I'm going to use our event period to talk about careers at PADT. So we filled a bunch of positions. We just added a new CFD engineer and an intern for electrical engineering for high frequency and low frequency. So we're really excited about those two additions. But we are still looking for 6 people. The first one is an accounting specialist, so somebody to do accounts payable, accounts receivable. Some of you out there in ANSYS world may know somebody in the Phoenix area that's interested in a job like that. We are also looking for an executive assistant to help myself and my two partners be a little more responsive to our employees. And so one of the things that was suggested a while back and we're going to do is actually get somebody to help us rather than doing everything ourselves. We are also still have an opening for an account manager. So if you've ever wanted to sell ANSYS or know somebody that wants to sell ANSYS products, we're looking for somebody in Colorado as well as Arizona. Actually, we were okay in Arizona, but California, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, any of our other territories, we're very, very interested. Southern California especially and Colorado especially. I think we're going to fill the position. I don't know if you guys know this, but we've got a really nice prospect for Colorado. But we're still looking for, we need about 2 or 3, maybe another salesperson. So do let us know out there in ANSYS land if you know somebody that's looking. Our unicorn right now that we're looking for is the perfect low-frequency electromagnetics engineer. So somebody who understands motors, especially.
Right. Yep.
So they understand low-frequency electromagnetics. They don't necessarily have to know Maxwell, but it'd be great if they knew ANSYS Maxwell. But what we're really looking for, what we're getting is a lot of interest from customers on doing detailed modelings of the electric motors.
And we're targeting Southern California for that position.
That's where the interest is. There's a lot of motor manufacturers around there. They've basically been using experimentation and brute force to design these motors. And people are seeing some really great productivity enhancements or efficiency enhancements by really simulating the motors. So we need help there. We're also looking on the 3D printer side. We've got 2 openings. One is inside sales. So if you want to launch your career in sales and you're interested in 3D printing, or you know somebody that is interested in 3D printing and likes talking to people, we do have an opening for 3D printer inside sales. That's basically contacting people and seeing their interest. And then the last position we have open is in Texas. We're looking for somebody to help us sell metal 3D printers there. So yes, PADT is looking to expand into Texas, and the first step is going to be metal 3D printers. So go to our website, padtinc.com, and click on careers to see these postings. Spread the word to your friends and family and associates and join the PADT family. All these positions are in Arizona except for the ANSYS account manager and the low-frequency electromagnetics.
And the
one that says Texas, yes.
The Texas position is not in Texas. Arizona.
Yeah, the Texas position is not in Arizona. It is in Texas. So that was a follow-up on that, and I think we're done. So as usual, we go around the table, say something, say goodbye and say something witty, a joke, or give some advice.
All right. Well, just a point of knowledge that you can now compress RST files.
Really?
Yes.
So like .zip.
Right.
Or .z. Yeah.
Right. We had one that was 11 gigs the other day, and it compressed down to 5.5.
That's significant.
So, yeah.
Because you used to get huge. Like 2%.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So they
put that up.
They are
I'm
working.
Sure they're all different. But.
Yeah, they are working on the efficiency of those files, so that's really encouraging. Great news. Ted?
I'll just read a quote that I happened to read this morning. It's from Scott Adams, the Dilbert creator. And the quote is, "Engineers like to solve problems. If there are no problems handily available, they will create their own problems."
Yeah. Yeah.
I think my wife would agree with
yeah, this. My wife already agreed with that one.
It's funny because it's true.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 And this is Eric Miller signing off. And I guess my thing is, I just finished reading, or actually listening. I don't read anymore. I listen to books. The new biography on Leonardo da Vinci by Isaacson. If you read his biography about Franklin or Einstein, you know, he writes great biographies. They're really interesting. But as an engineer, the Da Vinci biography was extremely fascinating and was very insightful into how humans think and how geniuses operate. And he was a genius of a different kind than Einstein and Franklin. And I guess he's encouragement for ADD sufferers out there of the world because he never actually finished anything. But I was shocked at the number of discoveries he made that scientists didn't, and he never published his notes, but they were in his notes, and scientists didn't discover these things till, you know, 100, 200, 300 years later that he had found by just observing the world and just taking the time to dig deep into things and really understand it. So when he wanted to paint a neck, it's kind of gross, but he would go find cadavers and he would dissect those cadavers and understand all the structure underneath the neck so that when he painted it, the skin stretched over all that stuff that was underneath perfectly. And he studied light and optics. And I hope to do some future blog articles about the work he did with turbulence. So you look at some of our ANSYS plots and some of the drawings he did of turbulence around pillars and water, and he understood turbulence quite well, actually. It's fascinating, just from observation. I can't imagine if he would have known calculus what he would have been able to do, because it didn't exist then. So I highly recommend, if you're looking for a book to read, Leonardo da Vinci by Isaacson. I forget his first name. Really, really good. And that's it for the week. And we will see you in 2 weeks, I promise, maybe, unless something else comes up. So I'll see you then. Thank you. Thank you for joining us for episode 9 of the All Things ANSYS podcast. We hope that everyone had a great Thanksgiving, and we hope you find both of these discussions useful. We know we get a lot of questions on both topics, so we thought they'd be good to cover today. As a reminder, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with ANSYS Inc., and the opinions expressed are those of the people on the show only. For more information, visit www.padtinc.com/blog, and please share your thoughts and questions through an email to podcast@padtinc.com. See you next time.